It is the afternoon show, but it is the breakfast show in Australia where my guest lives, and he's coming to us today. Rosie, when you came to work for the show, you have an eye for talent, and one of the very first guests you wanted on was Dr. John Dixon.
It's true. It's true.
I know.
I'm a history geek. I saw his videos. I was going through the library at the radio station here, and he has so many books. So we're talking about his newest book, Bullies and Saints, but he has so many.
Yeah,
I hope
written.
This is just the beginning of our time with John, because, again, I'm a history geek, and he loves history, too.
Oh, he loves history. He's written over 20 books. He's not only an author and speaker, but a historian and also a media presenter. Two of his books have become television documentaries. He also co-hosted the documentary for The Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. Sounds very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches a course on the historical Jesus at the University of Sydney in Australia and researches the origins of Christianity in the Roman Empire.
I know.
This is way more interesting than anything I normally do.
Well, Annie, are you hearing that there might be an Old Testament series show that he might have a favorite Old Testament character?
We definitely have to talk to him about that.
I know.
Yeah. But Dr. John Dixon is our guest all the way from his home in Sydney, Australia. John, welcome. Good morning.
Welcome. I mean, thank you so much. You Americans are so sweet. That introduction is too kind.
Thank you so much. Okay, your book, Bullies and Saints, An Honest Look at the Good and Evil of Christian History. This is going to be a book that anyone who's interested in history and might be even skeptical of the Christian faith, but has an open mind to learning the truth, this is a good book for them.
Yes, most of my books have been written for people who aren't sure what to make of the Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
So they're Christian books for the person who isn't yet a Christian, is how I think of it. And a lot of people today fear that Christianity has really only damaged the world. You often hear people say, you know, religion poisons everything.
Yeah.
And they mean Christianity. They don't just mean the other religions. And so I think to approach this as a Christian, I have to be honest about the failings of the church. And that's what the bullies in the title means. And hopefully by being honest about the failings of church history, I have an opportunity then to talk about the beautiful tune of Jesus, as I put it, that is his gospel of the love of enemy, of God himself, giving himself for the enemy that we might be saved. And that beautiful tune does also weave its way through every century of church history. And that's what this book does. It shows the bullies and the saints of every history of the last 20 centuries. And asks the reader to ponder the question, which is truer to the founder? When Christians are starting wars and torturing people, are they obeying their master or departing? It's obvious. When Christians are starting hospitals and offering education for all and caring for the poor, are they following the master or disobeying the master? And again, the answer to that is obvious, and hopefully by the end, the skeptic might think, hey, well, I should have another listen to that beautiful tune of Jesus.
Yeah, John, I love in the book, you sort of come out swinging with some of the biggest assumptions and objections to Christianity through the centuries and how the churches were kind of bullies. They killed and conquered to spread the gospel, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there were times when that was true.
Hard to say that. It's hard to say that out loud.
It is hard, but I mean, the thing is, in the first three centuries, you don't see any of that.
Okay.
In the first three centuries, the Christian tools were prayer, persuasion, service, and suffering.
Yeah.
And all of our evidence makes that clear.
Yeah. Now,
and by the end of the fourth century, it's a little bit different. They're rioting, they're ripping down pagan temples, and on a couple of occasions, murdering people. Now, not all Christians, but I'm just saying some Christians. And fortunately, there are always prophets, people whom God sends to the church to say, hey, we've got a plank in our eye. We need to take it out.
Yeah, in the book, you really talk about the Crusades kind of in a nutshell, which you do very succinctly, which I love. Would you be able to just pick a crusade and give us a little taste?
Yeah, well, I mean, the First Crusade is the, I think, the most interesting one because, well, it's the first. But all of the theology is developed there. Now, on the one hand, the First Crusade was a response to the aggression of Islamic armies in the centuries before. Islamic armies had taken over the Middle East and they were pressuring Constantinople, which at that point was still Christian. And so the European Christians started this crusade. They wanted to go and, you know, protect their Christian Eastern friends, but also win back Jerusalem. So at one level, you could say, well, it was justified, right? If any war is justified, it's justified to go and do that. However, when they conducted the war, they marched down the Rhine and slaughtered Jewish communities as practice on their way to the Middle East.
Wow.
And when they got to Jerusalem, and they took the city, they broke all the rules of just war by killing women and children as well as combatants. And so at that point, whatever you might say about, oh, you know, the Crusades were a defensive maneuver, they ended up being a disgusting blasphemy. And the day after they took Jerusalem, so this is July 15, 1099, the next day, July 16, they held a church service in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, right there in Jerusalem. I'm sure many of your listeners have been to that church. They held a church service there praising Jesus for this crushing victory over the unbelievers. And the discord there is shocking. And I think everyone can tell that is not the beautiful tune that Jesus taught us to sing. That is way out of tune.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how these crusades had a reputation for the successful bullying. That's just crazy.
Well, they ended up being incredibly unsuccessful. I mean, there are five crusades in the Middle East. And although that first crusade, they took Jerusalem, the next crusades, they were complete failures. The Muslims repelled them. And, you know, for most of Muslim history, the crusades were remembered as proof that Muslims are better than Christians at fighting. It's only in recent times that the word crusade has come to sort of mean Christian bullying.
So we have next Jesus talking about the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm.
Loving your enemies, do good to those who hate you. This is turning everything inside out.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I designed the book so that we start at the midway point between Jesus and today. That's, you know, around 1000s. That's when the Crusades were.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wind back to the original and then ask the question, how could we possibly have got to that point when Jesus said, love your enemy, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who mistreat you? And the thing about that ethic is that it isn't an arbitrary moralism on the part of Jesus. It's the whole story of Jesus. I mean, his whole story was to come to give himself for the enemies of God, to lay down his life for our forgiveness. And so it isn't just this arbitrary, hey, love your enemies. It's actually what Jesus Christ is like. And for the next three centuries, Christians really did pursue that ethic in quite dramatic ways. We have Roman evidence. We have obviously Christian evidence making clear that the Christians were oppressed from time to time by the Romans. And the Christians somehow were so confident that Jesus was Lord that they felt, well, we can afford to be good losers. We can afford to be crushed and yet smile sweetly and keep preaching the gospel at them. And that strategy of persuasion and service and suffering and prayer actually led to the transformation of the Roman Empire. It really wasn't Constantine in the 4th century that converted the Roman Empire. It was what the Christians had done in laying the groundwork through persuasion that really brought the empire around.
Mm-hmm. Dr. John Dixon is my guest. His book is called Bullies and Saints, an honest look at the good and evil of Christian history. In chapter 5, John, you talk about the persecution of the church from AD 64 to 312.
Mm.
And you entitled it Good Losers. Please say more about that.
Well, my overwhelming impression of those few centuries is that Christians were good losers. And the Romans spotted this. The Romans couldn't work out why you could kill a whole bunch of Christians and the Christians would still say, oh, but we're going to be praying for you. Don't you worry about that. And it really confused everyone. But skeptics used to say, oh, it's because the Christians were all weaklings and slaves that they didn't know better. Of course, they adopted that humble loser ethic. But actually, the primary sources make abundantly clear that it was because they thought they were winners that they could afford to be good losers, in the sense that they knew that Christ had died and he had been raised and sits at God's right hand. And that absolute confidence gave them the ability to lose some of the battles because they knew that they had won the war and would. And so it's actually out of this conviction that Christ reigns that they could walk into the arena and face suffering and, often death. But even if it wasn't death, they were exiled, their churches were burnt down, their scriptures were collected and destroyed. But they would continue to pray for their enemies. They would continue to preach the gospel. And it's remarkable. They were good losers because they knew they'd already won.
John, when you're doing your research on the Crusades, what were some things that you came across that you were a little bit shocked by or surprised by or you could tell us that we may not know?
Perhaps the most shocking theological thing about the Crusades isn't simply that Christians went to war. I mean, I am not an absolute pacifist. I think war can be the best of a bad option. But the theological thing that is most shocking is the promise from the higher-ups in the church that anyone who participates in the crusade and kills an infidel will have their sins forgiven.
Wow.
They literally taught, and we have the documents, they literally taught that killing in this war would atone for your sins. Now that, to my mind, and I'm sure to yours, Bill, is a departure from the original gospel of Christ that is hard for us to understand.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk about some people that I've frankly don't know a lot about, Julian the Apostate.
Yeah. Well, his name sort of gives it away, although he didn't go by the name Julian the Apostate. That's what the Christians called him afterwards. But of course, Julian was the emperor of Rome, mm-hmm. a couple of emperors after Constantine. So Constantine at the beginning of the 4th century becomes a Christian. And I think he really did become a Christian. But then a couple of emperors later, so we're in the year 361 now, in the sort of middle of the 4th century, Emperor Julian, who's a 30-year-old, he's smart, he's effective, he's a good warrior, he abandons Christianity. He expels from his royal court all Christians. He sacks all Christian professors because there were many Christian academics in this period. It's one of the best kept secrets of Christian history. Christians were leading intellectuals from very early on. But Julian gets rid of them all. He allows churches to be burnt down and he bans some Christians to go to church. He doesn't start a full-on persecution, but he does sideline Christianity, which had been doing so well for a long time. And the other thing he does is he tries to beat Christians at charity. He worked out, and we have his own letters, so we know this is what he was thinking. He worked out that one of the key ways Christianity grew was through all the charities they were starting. They were feeding the poor, they were establishing hospitals and burying the dead for free. And so he insisted that in the pagan temples, pagans do the same thing. And he donated imperial money to the pagan temples to try and beat the Christians at the charity game. But of course, you can't really convince pagans to do charity because their message isn't about charity. And so it never worked. And he died 2 years later. And that was his, he could have, humanly speaking, turned the whole fate of Christianity around. But instead he died. And actually, it ultimately led to the advancement of Christianity, because Christians saw how close they came to really losing the empire, that they redoubled their efforts to win people to Christ. And within a generation, maybe two generations, the majority of the Roman Empire is now Christian.
My guest is Dr. John Dixon. He's calling us today all the way from Australia. His book is called Bullies and Saints, An Honest Look at the Good and Evil of Christian History. After a short break, we'll be right back with lots more with John. Welcome back. My guest is Dr. John Dixon. His book is called Bullies and Saints, An Honest Look at the Good and Evil of Christian History. I love the fact that, John, as you are calling from your home in Australia, that we're not paying for long-distance charges anymore. Everything is free nowadays, talking to people halfway around the world.
It is lovely.
That is really nice.
It is lovely.
All right, here's a question out of your book, and I'm going to have you answer this one. Who's the greatest European you've never heard of?
I'm going to say Alcuin of York. Alcuin was a Christian minister in York in the 700s, the mid to late 700s. Okay, so it's the 8th century. We think of this as the Dark Ages, or some people do anyway. And Alcuin was the smartest man in Europe. He'd read the classical pagan sources, but also all of the Christian sources and Christian theology up to that point. And Charlemagne, who is the ruler of Europe, asks Alcuin to come to Europe and set up an educational system. Charlemagne wanted Europe to be educated. And Alcuin set about establishing schools all the way across what we would call France and Germany and elsewhere, schools that were open to the rich and the poor, boys and girls. And he would train them in the so-called liberal arts. So many of your listeners will know the sort of classical education model that is, mm-hmm. Incredibly popular. But Alcuin is the one who's doing that in the name of Christ. So his view was, we need to learn about arithmetic and grammar and rhetoric and philosophy and astronomy and music, because God's wisdom is imprinted on the world. So anything you study about the world is learning more about God. And knowing all of those things will help you read your Bible, was his approach to education. And he established, in the end, hundreds of schools right across Europe that lifted Europe to an educational place that hadn't been seen before. I mean, even in Greek and Roman times, schooling was really not for the poor, not for girls. And Alcuin almost single-handedly was the kind of secretary for education, we might say, who established the system we now take for granted. That is, schooling is for everyone.
Oh.
I mean, it's hard to put ourselves back in a period where that just no one assumed that.
Right.
But we all assume it now, and it's because of Alcuin. And not just his intellect, but his Christian faith drove him to make sure everyone who was able to learn the liberal arts would learn it, so that they would know God better.
So, John, I assume we're putting Alcuin of York in the saints category.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the other great thing he did is he taught Charlemagne to stop killing people in the name of Christ. Charlemagne would go into new areas like up north in Saxony and try and convert those hard-nosed Germanic peoples up north by saying, baptism or the sword, you take your pick. And it was Alcuin, and we have Alcuin's letters pleading Charlemagne, rebuking Charlemagne, and saying, no, the way of Christ is the way of gentleness and persuasion. You'll only turn people off Jesus Christ by doing that. And we know that the very next year after this letter Alcuin wrote to Charlemagne, Charlemagne changed the law so that no longer was it forcing people to become Christians.
Oh, I like persuasive people. So let's talk about another saint.
Well, boy, where to go?
I know, but I mean, I love Alcuin of York. I want to hear another. I'd like to hear about another saint.
Basil the Great.
I was hoping you were going to bring up Basil.
Yeah, he's mostly known for theology. So nerdy listeners who have been to seminary will know Basil of Caesarea mainly because of his defense of the Trinity. These so-called Cappadocian fathers, they lived in what we would call Turkey now, were high intellects, and they defended the Trinity and showed how it made sense of reality. However, in his day, the most impactful thing he did is start the world's first public hospital. And we have the documentation for it and the description of it. And he established really a healthcare center, we might say, that had one section for lepers, another section for the aged, another section for abandoned babies, another section just for the sick, and so on. And he offered this free of charge using church money. Mm. He employed doctors and nurses using church money. And it was such a success that by the end of that century, the fourth century, there was another big hospital, and it was a Christian hospital in Rome. And within, 400 years, there were literally thousands of hospitals, all of them run by the church. In fact, in the Middle Ages, part of the bishop's job description was to make sure there was a hospital in their diocese that could offer healthcare to people. So Basil, a theological nerd who was also very, very practical.
Yeah. John, I appreciate that. We have a couple minutes left. I know this is not enough time to talk about the Inquisition, but I'd love for you to give us a teaser on it.
Well, I'm no fan.
Nor am I. I like the Monty Python sketch, but that's about it.
Indeed. Look, the Inquisitions were terrible in as much as they were, designed to torture people to give up their heresies. The point I try and make in the book is that the Inquisitions were actually, in their day, regarded as the fairest, most just, most kind courts in the land. We have records of prisoners in the secular courts begging to go to the Inquisition courts because they know that they get a proper bed and meals and rules of justice. The other thing to know is that it's shocking that the Inquisitions, the Spanish Inquisition, killed about 5,000 to 6,000 people for heresy over its 350 years. So that's 5,000 or 6,000 too many. But then compare it with something like a secular revolution, the French Revolution, which killed 17,000 in just 9 months. People often look at the Inquisitions and say, aha, look how bad the church is. But people don't look at the French Revolution, which is an entirely secular, atheistic revolution. It killed 17,000 people in just 9 months. But people don't go, oh, look at the French or look at secularism. The point is the human heart, yes, in possession of an ideology can do terrible things. But there's no way we can look at the Inquisitions and say, aha, that's proof that the church is wicked.
Mm. But we do look at the history and say that violence has always been a big part of the human story.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the Romans and Greeks didn't need the Christians to teach them how to do war, right?
They
were doing fine on the war front. So the real question isn't, have Christians done bad things? The obvious answer is yes. The question isn't, have Christians participated in all that is wicked? The answer is yes. The real question is, what is the unique contribution of Christianity? Well, no one could say war, torture, or anything like that, because that's everywhere. The unique contributions of Christianity to our world are the doctrines that every human being is equal and precious, the love of enemies, humility, charity, education for all. These things were not in existence in Greece and Rome. They were given to our Western world because of the church, because of Jesus Christ and his gospel.
Yeah, John, I feel like I've learned a whole lot in a short amount of time. So thank you for finishing your breakfast and coming on the program with me.
Bill, it was a real pleasure.
Yeah, I hope you come back. We're going to reach out to you soon. Thank you.
Lovely.
All right. Thank you. Dr. John Dixon has been my guest. His book, one of 20 that he's written, this one's called Bullies and Saints, An Honest Look at the Good and Evil of Christian History. Very interesting book. We'll take a little break. When we come back, hour two is just ahead with Dr. Mark Muska. It's called Ask the Professor, so whatever questions you have, let us know. You can send them over right as we speak at 877-933-2484. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.